morning. It is time for the Third Degree, Environment and Social Justice Discussion Show on 2SER. I'm Simon Unwin, and today on the show, we look at the possibility of uranium mining in New South Wales, which is a new idea. And we also hear from Josh Fox, the director of Gasland, after he was kicked out of a US congressional hearing. But first today...
Last week, the Premier introduced the Mining Legislation Amendment Uranium Exploration Bill with the purpose of opening up New South Wales for uranium exploration. This would overturn a 26-year moratorium on uranium exploration and mining, which is a long-standing and extremely sensible policy.
So you're hearing the voice there of Nat Wolseley of the Beyond Nuclear Initiative speaking yesterday at a SNAP protest rally outside the New South Wales Parliament at lunchtime. About 100 people gathered on fairly short notice to voice their opposition to last week's unexpected introduction by the New South Wales government, the Liberal government, of legislation that would lift the long-standing ban on uranium exploration in New South Wales.
No uranium mining! Leave it in the ground! No uranium mining! Leave it in the ground! No uranium mining! Leave it in the ground!
The nuclear industry in Australia has a record of failed standards, radioactive leaks and spills, long-lived radioactive waste problems, disproportionate impacts on traditional owners and regional communities, and safety risks and health risks for workers. By flirting with this toxic industry, O'Farrell is looking at the dollar signs, but not the danger signs. Uranium mining leads to weapons, and uranium mining leads to radioactive waste. At Olympic Dam Mine in South Australia, there is now a literal mountain of radioactive tailings waste covering the desert. The Ranger Uranium Mine in the Northern Territory is supposedly the most heavily regulated in Australia, if not the world, as it lies within the boundaries of the Kakadu National Park. Despite this, the tailings pond is leaking 100,000 litres of radioactive materials every single day. There is no way to solve the problem, the intractable problem of waste from nuclear power. After 60 years of the industry, there is still not one high-level nuclear waste dump operating anywhere in the world. Yet O'Farrell wants to dig up more uranium. Shame.
Shame!
Instead of ploughing down the dead-end street of nuclear industry, the New South Wales needs to be investing in sustainable industries, in renewable jobs that will benefit the communities and the environment, and leave a positive legacy, not piles of radioactive waste.
So, given the current balance of power in the New South Wales upper house, the legislation's passing depends very much on the position of the minor parties there, as Greens MLC Jeremy Buckingham explained.
In terms of the legislation, it's critically important that the community and the media understand that the only way that this uranium industry will get off the ground in New South Wales if it gets the support of the Conservative crossbenchers in the Shooters and Fisher's Party and the Christian Democrats. Without this, their support, without this legislation will die. Labor and the Greens are standing together, and with their support, we can kill this legislation. And it's incredibly important that we do, because it's just more in Barry O'Farrell's war against renewable energy. We have seen, since he has come to power, his introduction of the most prescriptive laws regarding wind farms, his attack on the science of climate change, his attack on the solar industry. And at the same time, he has a love affair with dirty energy. We've seen a perpetuation of coal mines, more expansion of coal mining in New South Wales. They're facilitating the coal seam gas industry. And now, unbelievably, they are now starting the process of beginning a uranium mining and nuclear industry in New South Wales. It's a shame on this government because they had no mandate to do it. And the people of New South Wales are saying they want clean, renewable energy and they want it now. This uranium mining bill is unnecessary and we will fight it tooth and nail.
So I spoke to Pepe Clark, the CEO of the New South Wales Nature Conservation Council, and I asked him why the Premier is introducing this legegislation now.
Well, the O'Farrell government has introduced this legislation very quickly after its public announcement. It knows this legislation will be unpopular. Barry O'Farrell told us just a few months ago that they had no plans to overturn this ban. They've now reversed that position and they're introducing the legislation as quickly as they can. But Mr. O'Farrell has told us that we should be having a mature and sensible debate about whether to use this resource. Well, the time for that debate is now. We need a full parliamentary inquiry into the risks and costs of the uranium industry before this legislation goes any further.
And, I mean, the government is talking about the economic benefits of uranium. I mean, what are those benefits?
Well, the economic benefits fall into a few categories. There is the employment and direct economic activity from the mine, but also, perhaps more importantly here in New South Wales, the royalties that flow to the state treasury. Now, we need to bear that in mind. The state government is not a disinterested party in this debate. The true costs of uranium mining last much longer. 40 years after it closed, the Rumjungle uranium mine in the Northern Territory is still costing the federal government millions of dollars to control the radioactive threat from that mine. We haven't learnt anything from the past. We need to make sure that we learn about the risks of radioactive waste, uranium mining, and indeed, even at the very earliest stage, uranium exploration. This needs to be stopped now.
I suppose that there would be arguments in some quarters that sourcing uranium in New South Wales could help power the Lucas Heights reactor, which helps to make nuclear medicines and that sort of thing. I mean, is that the case? Would there be benefits from this?
The purpose of mining uranium in New South Wales would be to export that uranium. We have no shortage of existing operating uranium mines in Australia. We have no shortage of uranium. What we do have a shortage of is common sense policy on uranium. We do not need this industry here in New South Wales. The government must leave this ban in place.
So also speaking at the rally yesterday was Yukiko Hirano of the 311 Nuclear Free Group. Yukiko is a Japanese woman who lives in Sydney.
200,000 people died after the nuclear bomb on Hiroshima. 140,000 people in Nagasaki, men, women, and children. Fukushima will remain danger for generations. 300,000 people are expected to suffer from cancer due to the Fukushima plant. The uranium was supplied by Australia. How many people must die before we say no to the uranium dollar? Uranium is not just for nuclear power. It is central to the arms industry. Unless we stop all of our nuclear weapons, the road to the end starts here, now, with the first step to outlaw the mining of the sales of and the ownership of uranium. Let all commercial interests be on notice. We will close down your uranium mines in Australia. We don't want your jobs. We don't want your salaries. We say no to the uranium dollar. Because if we don't, more nuclear forecast will continue. More nuclear power stations will be built. More nuclear bombs will be made on my town and your town. Consider this. No one is reminding that nuclear power is safe, except in Chernobyl and Fukushima. No one is reminding that nuclear bombs are deterrent and not for dropping, except on Japan.
I spoke to Yukiko after her speech about the 311 group and their origins.
We are Japanese community. After 11th of March last year, we got together and try to rethink about new energy instead of nuclear power, obviously, because of Fukushima plant. We call it 311 free nuclear.
How does it feel as a Japanese person living in Sydney to have this idea floated in the New South Wales Parliament of uranium exploration and mining happening in your state?
Very shocking. Very shocking, because just last year we had a big catastrophe in Japan, in Fukushima, and still not year, even within year, they decided to supply more uranium, and they make more new uranium and try to export to other countries, which is completely shocking.
It's coming up on the anniversary of the Fukushima disaster. Very soon. Is there anything planned to commemorate?
We have big commemoration ceremony next to Sakura Key in Fast Fleet Park. We will have speakers, performers, and then pray 1 minute silent for Japan disaster.
It was Yukiko Hirano of the 311 Nuclear Free Group speaking to me yesterday. The commemoration of the Fukushima incident is happening on the 11th of March. The first anniversary of that, and the location I think isn't quite confirmed yet. So if you are interested, keep checking the Beyond Nuclear Initiative website. That's just beyondnuclearinitiative.com, and I'm sure that that will be finalised pretty shortly.
Thank you.
Hi, you're on 2SER with me, Simon Unwin, and this is the Third Degree, Environment and Social Justice Half Hour. So I just played you a couple of songs there. The first one that you heard was by a band out of Melbourne, Infinite Void. That's their song Drawn In, taken from a demo that they put out towards the end of 2010. And that second one was by El Alamein from Brisbane, and that's also taken from a demo of theirs that I think came out last year. That track is called Overthinking. Highly recommend both of those bands, and just on Bandcamp and SoundCloud respectively, so yeah, check them out. Now, some of you may have heard of the documentary filmmaker Josh Fox. Now, Fox is famous or infamous for his award-winning film, Gasland, which brought the environmental and social transgressions of the natural gas industry in the USA to a very wide audience. Particularly, it brought to light the controversial procedure of fracking. And it's fair to say that Josh Fox is almost single-handedly responsible for the word fracking passing into the lexicon of people other than Battlestar Galactica fans. The release of his film in Australia also led to really quite intense scrutiny of the coal seam gas industry in Queensland and New South Wales. And if you do listen to any of the talk shows on 2SER, I'm sure you've heard of this. So anyway, Josh Fox is currently working on a sequel to Gasland for HBO. And right at the beginning of this month, he was in Washington, D.C., working on that, and he was there attempting to film a public federal congressional hearing on the Environmental Protection Agency's findings regarding fracking. And instead, he was arrested, handcuffed, and ejected from the building, which is fairly unprecedented. And we're going to play for you now an interview that Josh Fox gave quite soon afterwards to Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez from Democracy Now about what happened and what he was doing there in the first place. First, though, here's what the congressional hearing sounded like at the moment that Josh Fox was ejected.
Do you want to leave your camera, sir? You're under the same rules as regular status. Okay. Do you duty, officer?
Sir, come on.
Come on, Mr. Shannon.
What's the decision?
Should we discuss this before the Capitol Police take action at your direction without
the public hearing? I'm within my First Amendment rights, and I'm being taken out.
No, I'd rather do it here. Well, but before the meeting has begun and before the subcommittee has had a chance to discuss the issue, this guy is being led away in handcuffs. I'd like to move that he be allowed to film this meeting.
We're not doing it.
Well, then can you gavel the hearing in before this guy is...
That's my discretion.
What's the transparency that you're talking about?
Moments after Director John Fox was arrested inside the hearing in the House Subcommittee on Science, Space, and Technology, the subcommittee's chair, Republican Congressmember Andy Harris of Maryland, defended the decision to have the filmmaker removed.
9, the following shall apply to coverage of committee meetings or hearings by audio or visual means. Subsection J is very clear. Personnel providing coverage by the television and radio media shall be currently accredited to the radio and television correspondents' galleries, and that personnel providing coverage by still photography shall be currently accredited to the press photographers' galleries. Obviously, someone who records this hearing is to be credentialed. I will remind the members of the audience and the ranking member that on the House floor, you can't even bring a cell phone into the gallery. So we allow cell phones here, but we do draw the line at what recording devices, when you use a recording device, that you have to be credentialed.
Democrats on the committee attempted to postpone the hearing a week in order to give Josh Fox time to acquire the proper credentials. Congressmember Brad Miller of North Carolina is the top Democrat on the subcommittee.
Mr. Chairman, I move... in addition to the fellow who's just escorted out, who I understand was not credentialed, although he's, I understand, filming an HBO documentary, an ABC crew showed up earlier, and they were turned away on the stated reason that they had not requested to film in advance. I think all those rules are to control access where there's limited access. It is very clear that We have space in this room for either of them to testify or to film this hearing. If you claim that rule does not provide, does not allow them to film, or more accurately allows you the discretion, the majority, the power to turn them away, I move that the rules be suspended to the end, that the HBO, the fellow who wanted to film for HBO be allowed to film this hearing, and that ABC News be allowed to film this hearing, and All God's Children be allowed to fill this hearing until the room is too full to conduct our business.
Wednesday's hearing focused on a recent Environmental Protection Agency draft report that linked contaminated water supplies in Wyoming to chemicals used in hydraulic fracturing. While a lobbyist from the Western Energy Alliance testified at Wednesday's hearing, no local residents impacted by the water contamination were invited to speak.
Joining us now from Washington, D.C. is filmmaker Josh Fox. With us also via Democracy Now! Video stream is John Fenton, who is a Wyoming farmer and chair of the Pavilion Area Concerned Citizens. Josh, it's good to have you out of jail. Explain exactly why you were in that hearing yesterday and what happened as we listened to the debate between the Democrats and the Republicans as you were being handcuffed by police and taken out of the room.
Good morning, Amy and Juan, and certainly hi to John Fenton. Nice to see you. Well, I was there to report on a story that I've been following very closely for 3.5 years. John and his fellow people from Pavilion, I've been documenting their cases of water contamination for 3 years, and it's featured in the first film, Gasland. We continue to feature that in Gasland, too. So this was a crucial hearing for us to tape, because what was going on there was a clear and brazen attack on the EPA and on the meticulous 3.5-year investigation that took place in the small town of Pavilion, Wyoming, to expose a link between fracking and groundwater contamination. And this is the first case in which EPA has come out and said, at least in this last 10 years, that the likely cause of groundwater contamination was fracking. And what was apparent to us was that this was going to be an attack on science from within the Science and Technology Committee, that they had a panel that was stuffed with gas industry lobbyists, that there was this was actually a way of trying to dismantle this EPA report. We wanted to be there to show that that was what the agenda was. We wanted to report on what happened. I was not interested in disrupting that hearing. It was not a protest action. I was simply trying to do my job as a journalist and go in there and show to the American people what was transpiring in that hearing, so that down the line, as we know, there will be a lot of challenges mounted to that EPA report and, frankly, to the people in Pavilion who have been sticking up for themselves and demanding an investigation into the groundwater contamination, and to make sure that people could view that in a larger form than usually happens.
And Josh, the attacks have come not only through this congressional investigation on the EPA report, but also from local press in Wyoming as well. Obviously, there are huge implications nationwide for what the results of this study show.
Well, virtually every Republican candidate right now is out for elimination of the EPA. Which shows the deep, deep influence of oil and gas on Congress and on the Republican Party. So what you're seeing here happening is a war between the federal agency, which is well-funded and impartial in a certain sense, or more impartial, and the state regulatory agencies, which, as we've investigated, and we will show quite thoroughly, I think, in Gasland 2, have an enormous amount of influence and pressure on them from oil and gas, to the point to which many, many people think that they're corrupt. So getting the EPA out of the way is one of these ways that you completely dismantle the regulatory system, and that's why the EPA is the target here.
I want to turn to President Obama's recent comments about natural gas drilling. This is what he said just last week in his State of the Union address.
We have a supply of natural gas that can last America nearly 100 years. And my administration will take every possible action to safely develop this energy. The experts believe this will support more than 600,000 jobs by the end of the decade. And I'm requiring all companies that drill for gas on public lands to disclose the chemicals they use. Because America will develop this resource without putting the health and safety of our citizens at risk. The development of natural gas will create jobs and power trucks and factories that are cleaner and cheaper, proving that we don't have to choose between our environment and our economy. And by the way, it was public research dollars over the course of 30 years that helped develop the technologies to extract all this natural gas out of shale rock, reminding us that government support is critical in helping businesses get new energy ideas off the ground.
That was President Obama in the State of the Union address, Josh Fox, director of Gasland.
That was actually quite, I think, a very painful moment for a lot of people who have been focusing on gas fracking for the last several years. I think the president's statements right there are wrong. I mean, it's very clear that we do not have 100 years worth of natural gas, and certainly not if we want to start using it in cars and trucks. And it has been, it's very, very unclear in the science whether or not this fracking technique can be done safely. And in my research, it shows itself to be inherently contaminating. And there is no proof to think that we could be doing this gas extraction safely. On the other hand, what the president did say was that he was in support of the disclosure of the chemicals, which is to say the reversal of the exemption to the Safe Drinking Water Act that the gas industry was granted in 2005. They were made exempt from the Safe Drinking Water Act, which stated that in the 2005 energy bill, allowing them to inject toxic chemicals and toxic material into the ground without having to report that. So what he's saying is you can't get away with not reporting and not disclosing the chemicals that you're pumping into the ground. However, when we look at the industry's own reports, and it shows that 40% of their wells have integrity issues. That is to say, the well casing that protects the groundwater cracks in 40% of the cases over a short period of time and in a larger percentage over a longer period of time. This is basically surrendering those areas to groundwater contamination either in the short term or in the long term. So I think that this is obviously an issue of an enormous amount of importance. There's no way you can actually just start galloping down this road of natural gas. What this means is a further delay in our transition to renewable energy economy. And when you look at what Obama's EPA is doing, they're extremely aggressive. They have actually been very responsive. I mean, John could probably talk about that. EPA just delivered water to people in the town of Dimmock, which suffered the similar kind of water contamination that has happened in Pavilion. And they have been stepping up to the plate. So this is why you're seeing the Republicans attacking EPA, which is the part of Obama's policy which I agree with wholeheartedly.
So that was documentary filmmaker and activist Josh Fox speaking there earlier this month to Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez of Democracy Now! Thanks to those guys for sharing that audio. And that is pretty much all we have for the Third Degree for another week. Do stay switched on to 2SER and enjoy The Daily, which is coming up right away after this. ¶¶